from around the world. Or from your city. And sometimes just down the street.
Howdy, neighbor.
It's the Jeep Talk Show interview.
Hi-dee-ho, boys and girls. It's time for another Jeep Talk Show interview. And tonight we're going to be talking to Harry over at Coyote Enterprises. I was just having a hell of a time saying that. I had to have Harry correct me. I don't know why. I can't pronounce Coyote. I've been watching the Coyote and Roadrunner for years, Harry. I should be able to remember that one easy enough.
Yeah, I can understand, Tony. quite frankly, just say it cowboy way, Coyote.
Coyote, yeah. So, so Harry, Steve, our buddy Steve 4.3LXJ from XJ Talk, and actually does some contributor segments here for the show, or has done in the past, turned us on to you, and specifically you and this company, and about getting you guys here on the Jeep Talk Show, and I'm really glad you were able to do it for us. Now you've done this before. I think you've been on another podcast. Let's see, what was it? I saw it, the Off Road Podcast. I think it was Ben over there at the Off Road Podcast. So you spoke with him on the Firearms Radio Network.
Yes, exactly.
Excellent. So you guys have two products. You have beadlocks, and what was the other one?
Automatic tire deflators.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's got to have those things. So let's talk about the beadlocks first. What's the deal with the beadlocks? Now, I've heard of the Staun, and I'm probably pronouncing that incorrectly, beadlocks. How is the Coyote Enterprise beadlocks different from those or similar?
The Coyotes are virtually an evolution of the Stauns. I was approached at... we'll back up on that story. I lectured at 31 colleges throughout Southern California for about 15 years. I published a newsletter. I would review products. Staun of Australia approached me when they came out with their automatic tire deflators to do an article. I did an article, good product. And then when they decided to come out with a beadlock, they did the same. They had me test it and so on. They were happy with what I wrote up, and I, by gosh, call a spade, and if they had not worked, you would have gotten that in my article, but they did work very well. And so they asked me to be their importer. They formed Staun USA and gave me 30% of the corporation for no money in, so can't pass that deal up.
Wow,
right?
That's nice.
So what happened was, long story short, about 2010, they went broke. And I won't dwell on either the engineering or financial reasons, but I saw they had a good product. I'd been struggling with them since 2005. Well, actually, 2002 with the deflators. 2005, they came out with the beadlocks. And they didn't seem to listen to ideas I had about changing and improving the product. And they went broke. I had a decision, make them, find somebody else to make them, give them up, or start making them myself. I chose to make them myself. I spent about 2 years improving the design and overcoming the two main problems, which were the air channel and the tubes. They pop tubes. And today we have the Coyote beadlock.
So let's talk a little bit more about that. Well, first off, let's make sure that people understand what these beadlocks are. It's basically something that goes on the inside of the tire, between the tire and the wheel, and keeps the wheel from spinning, or the tire from spinning. The wheel keeps the wheel from spinning when you're aired down, and the tire just can't really grip the sides of the wheel sufficiently. So this lets you air down quite a bit, correct?
Yeah, you've got it exactly right. I call it a dual internal pneumatic boltless beadlock. That's a five-word way of saying a tire within a tire to make it real easy. And that's all it basically is. The difference in it and like NASCAR interliners is NASCAR wants to be right up against the inside of that outside tire bead, because when they go flat at 200 miles an hour, you don't want air down. And so the coyotes and all internal beadlocks give you air down space for going off road. And that's the real powerful feature of them. But they actually have several other features that are a real advantage. They lock both tire beads. They can be used on any rim. You just drill an extra hole for the inner tube. This is the thing that holds the air in the mini tire, the beadlock case, and can go on any kind of rim, beadlock rim, standard rim, split rims, or whatever. And so they're quite versatile. The most powerful thing they do is they present, particularly for like hammer racers, Ultra 4 classes and so on, they present a 3-inch high, 40 PSI tire and rim saving bump stop. So when you hit something, your air down to 7, so you can make it through the rough stuff, you get out on the open desert and you're going 100 and you hit a buried rock, it goes through that 7 PSI pretty fast right up to the rim. With the 40 PSI beadlock, it saves the day and helps prevent rim and tire damage.
So just looking here at the site, and that's coyoteents.com. So Coyote Enterprise, but that's coyoteents.com. You can go there now while you're listening here to this interview. Looking at your site, it says fits 14 through, 14, 15, 16, 14 through 17-inch rims. So you don't support the 22s or the 24-inch rims over there at all, Harry?
Not yet. and it's kind of a tale of woo. Stahn had 20-inch beadlocks.
Wow.
And I get lots of interest for 18s and 19s also. 19 is a Forest Service size, and I'd love to be doing something there. Long story short, I cannot get the webbing as strong as I want, as wide as I want, for those bigger beadlocks, the 18, 19s, and 20s. So as of right now, I'm holding off, and I limit it to 17. But if you go on my website and go in enter your email, you can be on notice for when I finally get them coming around. The problem is the tread of the beadlock is like a yank strap, a snatch-em strap, a pull-em strap, whatever you call it, only it's wider and it's actually stronger. And so the mills only make it up to about 8 inches wide. I need it wider.
Mm-hmm. So you said something kind of interesting. You said that you could use these things with beadlocks. I mean, I would assume you mean like the beadlocks that most of us are familiar with, the wheel beadlocks, the ones that have the outer metal ring that bolt to the bead of the tire. So would that be an unusual setup to have both I don't want to say mechanical, but let's say the external and the internal beadlocks, or is that for the guy that wears suspenders and a belt?
It's for him and others that find out they need them.
Oh, that's interesting. So would that be an extreme situation?
It works on both, and there's a hell of an advantage to the using a beadlock rim. For standard rims, you more or less either have to be very tire smart, very strong, combination of those things, or have access to a tire machine to change the tire. So when it comes to installing these things, you probably got to go out to a shop if you have standard rims. If you've got beadlock rims, it's a cinch. As you know, if you've ever done one, you just kind of muscle it over the outer bead. You muscle the inside tire bead over the outer bead. It sets down against the inside bead. And then you do what you need to do on the outside and bolt the thing together. And with that ease of setting the last bead, it's a no-brainer to put them on. And that's not quite true. I'm exaggerating there. It does take a learning process to put them on. It's not like, it's not like it's rocket surgery, but it definitely you ought to read the instructions.
Now, I noticed that your site says that these are not DOT approved. So is this something that you would only use for off-road vehicles, or do people just use them anyway and take their chances with the state police?
Actually, the DOT approved is a bit of a misnomer that's presented by a lot of people. There's no issues with the DOT on our VLOC. And the way that came about, when Stan asked me to do the first article back in 2005, I crossed my fingers, held my breath, called the California Highway Patrol, and I says, "What can you tell me about this concept of product?" The PR guy I got was an off-road guy.
Oh, excellent.
And I'm so lucky. Oh, yes. My God, so lucky. I've been trying to get into the DOT, the Federal Department of Transportation. Couldn't get a return phone call or any information. And so he took it upon himself to start checking them out. And California Vehicle Code, California Commercial Vehicle Code, and he got back into the DOT, they have no issues with it.
Oh, okay.
So it's not like there's a qualified or unqualified. It's just that they have no issues with it, is the way I have to put it. The DOT looks at it like an inner tube, which it more or less is.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I thanked him a bunch.
Oh, I bet.
In fact, I'll be putting the next article I'm going to put up on the news, on the website, will be the history and evolution of beadlocks, and it'll go into and cite that very, very case, my original tests, some pictures from my original tests, and so on.
All right. Well, so I misspoke. It's not that it's not DOT approved. It just, you're saying that the DOT doesn't have issues with it, and specifically the DOT in California is the one that you spoke with. So these are considered street legal. So you can do these. So my next question would be, how do you balance them?
Very carefully. Now, I have yet to have a balance problem. And that's maybe because somebody hasn't told me of their balance problem and give me a chance to correct it. The beadlock case is a mini tire, as I described. The tread, I don't have a one-piece tread. I have a strap that overlaps on itself by about 6 inches, and then that's sewn. That's a heavy spot. I also have, now when you get them all together, two valve stems, the standard valve stem and the other one that I suggest you drill clockwise about 6 to 8 inches from it. And so that's a heavy spot, and the beadlock tread is a heavy spot. The case tread is a heavy spot. You put those 180 degrees opposite each other, and it kind of compensates everything. And then the bottom line is they only weigh 7 pounds, all told.
Mm-hmm. So it would be safe to assume that you do have customers using these on daily drivers, weekend warriors.
Yeah. Yep. The weekend warriors love them as much as the other guys. And along with you, when we spoke earlier, you had mentioned being a Cherokee side of a sort.
Uh-huh.
And I was on the Jeep Speed Baja 1000 class winner 5 years in a row. Lance, who set up Pirate 4x4, became pretty popular, and he sold out of it. But it was his car. He won 5 years in a row, and he was running our beadlocks. And he claims that he had a flat one time, and he drove 30 miles at up to 100 miles an hour and got into the pits to have the pits change the tire. And survived.
Nice. Yeah, that's great. I mean, if whatever keeps you going, right?
Yeah, yeah. I won't call them a run flat. I don't want the liability issues, but I'll call them a limp flat. And
yeah,
along with that goes, some guys limp really fast.
They limp at high speed, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's really cool. Now, I see on your site that these things start about $185 a piece. Is that correct?
Yeah, figure a ballpark way. I was going to shows until we had this virus thing come up. But people had asked me about prices, and I would say a hip shot way of pricing it is, figure it's $200 a corner. It's going to be $800 for a set, regardless. With a little up and down for size, 14s are a little less than 17s. And what I would do at the shows, I would price set of four for $650 any size.
Oh, very nice. Of course, if you have a spare, you really need to have a set of five, right?
Yep, if you want to equip your spare with that, but somewhat along the lines of this limp flat business, if you're running four of them, you've got four spares, so to speak.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, because if something's wrong with the tire, you're going to be taking it off, and you can just swap out the bead locks at the same time.
Well, I wouldn't even do that. I'd just put the spare on to get home and then go about, get back to camp and then go about making whatever changes you want.
Yeah, makes sense. Now, I'm not a big side-by-side razor type fan, but I know there are people out there that are. Is this something that they would benefit from as well?
Very much so. 2017, King of the Hammers, Sarah Price, who was at that time Kawasaki sponsored and Toyota sponsored, she was running our beadlocks in Raceline beadlock rims.
Mm-hmm.
And she, in her qualifying lap, she about 100 yards off the line, she got a 1-inch gash in the sidewall. The beadlock held. She ran the qual lap. She finished the qual lap. She qualified 10th out of about 40 people. And that was on a flat tire. And the essence of it is you're not really running on a flat tire. If you can picture that beadlock occupies some vertical space, so you're running on kind of a half flat.
Very nice. So I guess people that have the side-by-sides, the Razors, the Polaris, and so on and so forth, they know what size wheels they have, but would that be the 14s, the 15s? That's the part I don't know. That's one of the reasons why I was thinking.
Yeah. Good. Thank you for reminding me to mention it. Yeah, that's why I have the 14s, and Sarah was running 15s.
Okay. So 15s aren't bad. That's what came on the Cherokees, and I think the TJs as well. So I kind of like a good rubber to metal ratio. So I kind of like the smaller rims anyway.
Yeah, I was furnished a Cherokee by Chrysler for a while, and I'm definitely a rubber versus metal guy. I just don't quite yet get it, other than sheer ground clearance for 20-inch wheels.
Yeah,
well, once you start reducing that rubber to metal ratio, it doesn't take much of a hit to collapse clear through.
Yeah,
and the bigger that ratio is, the more rubber you got, the more vertical rubber you got between the rim and the ground, the bigger beadlock I can put on there, and then it'll offer that much more protection. So that's the plus aspect for me for small wheels. Now, I have 16s now, and I live with it. I've got a Toyota Land Cruiser, but I'm a fan of lots of rubber and less metal.
Well, the metal doesn't really wrap around those rocks very well. I mean, it can, but it usually only does it once.
I've got a picture out of the Hammers that I think it was on Aftershock, and one guy had steel wheels, and he didn't have beadlock rims, and he somehow or other got a flat and rolled the outside, you know, that last little vertical lip that holds that the tire pushes against. He rolled that completely back and towards the ID, towards the axle on the whole damn thing. I've got a picture of that, and that's you just say that can't happen. Well, I got a picture of it. It did.
Yeah, it's not impossible. It's just not as flexible as the rubber part. So that's one of the things these kids these days don't understand about that all that metal. Yeah, I don't know. I just driving around rubber bands just drives me up the wall, but there you go. So now these beadlocks, you think rocks and you think low tire pressure and good rock crawling, because you can get your tire pressure down really low and it grabs the surface very well. But you can also use these in sand, can't you?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, they one of the tests I ran was do they... let's say you're really stuck in the sand. There may be a time when you want to go down to one or two or flat to get your ass out of the sand.
Mm-hmm.
And so do the beadlocks interfere with that? They occupy some of that flat space, that going flat space, hence the, you know, half flat versus full flat. And so one of the tests I ran was to flatten all four tires and try to go up a sand hill. Now, this was not a rocket launch, you know, blast and jump up the sand hill. This was a crawl up the sand hill. So I started out with just one tire that way and the others down to about seven. And we'd go along and we couldn't make it up this sand hill. And then we aired them all down to flat. And it was kind of like they would take a quarter spin, hook up, and then move the Jeep forward slowly again. And then take a little bit of a spin, hook up again, and move. Kind of like a paddle tire would. And you looked at the track and by gosh, it looked like a paddle tire.
So I guess the rubber was kind of gathering, and as it gathered, it would grip and then loosen back up is kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
You know, and in contrast to that, I'll point out the high end of it. I'm on several drag vehicles. I'm on a Honda sedan that's turning 175 in the 7 seconds, low sevens, and I'm on a diesel drag truck that's turning 170, 165 in the high sevens and low eights. And the sedan is only running 6 PSI, and the diesel drag truck is running 13 PSI. And so when you have questions about, you know, when somebody queries me about, well, can I spin the rim in the tire, I'd say very unlikely, and here's what's going on. I quote the diesel truck specs. He's delivering 1,200 foot-pounds of torque to the ground on 16-inch rims that he's running 13 PSI on, and we marked the valve stem against the rim against the tire, and behold, he doesn't spin the rims in the tire.
Yeah, it doesn't do very much good if you're trying to generate a lot of horsepower if the tires or the wheels inside the tires are spinning. So I can see how that would be a very important thing to get you down, get your ass down the road in a certain amount of time.
Yeah, in fact, that's the way I start the that Beadlock article is from the best of my guesses and research was that it started in the drag industry and they run sheet metal screws through the rim into the tire bead. To keep from doing that very thing. And they still do it, and they sell. There was four different products that varied from wheel screws to rim screws to tire screws to other terms. And in essence, it was a sheet metal screw that went through the rim into the tire.
Amazing. So do you have to adjust? Do you find yourself having to adjust the beadlock pressure and the tire pressure? Or when you go out, you just... If you're going to be doing something, you drop the tire pressure down and you leave the internal beadlocks alone.
It's kind of like you inflate the beadlock to your desired pressure. I recommend you run 40. They're spec to 50. That gives you 10 pounds of thermal expansion, safety.
Mm-hmm.
And then all you do is check them. And like all inner tube things, you got to be honest about this. If you own anything with inner tubes, bicycles, hand carts, wheelbarrows, whatever, they have inner tubes, you know they leak.
Sure.
I can't explain it. I won't try to beat it. I just say check them and air them back up to 40, and that's about the only thing you do. Then your tire pressure doesn't matter. If your listeners are familiar with the rock bouncers on the East Coast, the analogy I draw, most people know about the King of the Hammers.
Sure.
Maybe not all know about the rock bouncers, but rock bouncers, when they go on a course, they they make King of the Hammers look like grandma's run to the store to get a loaf of bread. they are brutal. I'm on a podium performer, a guy named Travis Lovett, and he runs flat. He pulls the valve course, and he just runs my beadlocks.
Oh, nice.
I've got a picture of him, a video. I've got all kinds of propaganda, I call it, put in an email for people to see. But I've got a picture of him that he sent me. He ran into a tree. He claims he was going 60 miles an hour. All I have is a video and a picture of a rim after he hit it. But he hit this tree. He bounced up about 7 feet, back down about 10, and finished the race. and he took and the tire stayed on the rim due to the beadlock. He didn't flatten the beadlock, didn't pinch it or anything, so it survived. And the rim is split. You know where the spokes join the part of the rim that holds the air.
Mm-hmm.
Those spokes are split for about 120 degrees.
Well, that certainly sounds very good for the for your product there. So let me ask you something. So say I'm not necessarily planning on it, but if I was in a high speed chase from police officers and they put one of those spike strips down, would my my beadlocks let me continue that that chase on for hours and hours until I ran out of fuel?
Good question. I don't know. I can only guess, but I have people tell me when they call, I'll get a call and I'll say, "Hey, I got a nail in my tire. Are your beadlocks bulletproof?" I says, What do you mean? What do you mean?" And he says, "Well, it bent the nail."
Oh.
And what happened in that case, I'm pretty sure, is as it loses air, the nail is no longer going straight in, like straight towards the axle. It's kind of going in at an angle.
Mm-hmm.
And the beadlock tread doesn't see that thing straight on like the tire tread probably did. And so it hits it at an angle, it bends it down. Now, those strips are a little more than a nail. So I'd guess you're going to lose, but if there's enough clearance, if the strip is 3 inches high and you've got 4 inches of clearance, you would drive over those and you wouldn't flatten the beadlock because the strip wouldn't, those spike strips wouldn't get clear through the tire and the beadlock at the same time.
Wouldn't that be some great propaganda? You were like, if it was on O.J. Simpson's Bronco and they had put the strips out there, you know, O.J. just was able to keep going. You know, you could spin that like defeat the police with coyote bottomless or boatless beadlocks. Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Now you guys also have something else having to do with air, which are the air downs. So it's kind of a good combination. You need to air down your tires, and you want to do that quickly. You guys have some deflators.
Exactly. That I usually start with the deflators, and then I go on and I say, okay, well, with air down tires, you understand the downside is you can pop a bead, and then I go off on my beadlock tangent. But we'll pick up with the deflators. Yes, I have an automatic tire deflator that I've got a patent on, and the patent is what allows it to snap off. It toggles off. It's like a light, old-fashioned light switches, and there's still some around. You know, you click them, and they yeah. snap up and make a click sound.
Right.
And behold, they've toggled on or off. And my deflator works that way pneumatically. The air and everything comes together to make it snap on and snap off. And the pressure range you can air down to is, I specify 1 to 65 pounds. And I've got springs that can let me run up. In fact, I just finished an email to a German race team why they want to air down to 75 pounds. I'm not sure, but... they said, can I go out to 75? And I went out and tested my blue springs. I gauge them by color.
Mm-hmm.
And my blue springs are good for about 100 pounds. So you can adjust them to whatever you want. The way I get that great big dynamic range of 1 to 65 is very simple. I just have two sets of springs. They come with the silver springs, which give you 1 to about 22. And then if you want to go to a pressure higher than 20, is what when I recommend you change it, you put the red springs in, and they're good for about 8 to 65.
So I've never used any deflators like this. I usually I have one that has the gauge, and it removes the pin from the valve, and it airs out, and you screw the pin back in. Just for the folks like me that have never used ones like this, which I would assume just kind of screw on, how do you go about setting it before you screw it on? Is it on the device itself, or do you have to kind of play
with
it?
Yeah, you can't calibrate it. There's too many manufacturing tolerances that would have to come together, starting with the spring tolerance. if you want a spring that's plus or better than plus or minus 10%, you pay through the nose for springs. So
sure.
Starting with that tolerance and the rest of the cumulative manufacturing tolerances, I can't give you a number for, you know, a marked point that advertises 10 or 15 or something like that. There's a couple of companies on the market that do, but they basically don't work. And that's because of those tolerances. The funniest one to me is NATO has an automatic tire deflator. And they have little notches. So they have 10, 12, 14, seems like one other one, 16, I think. And so you dial to this notch and you put it on and it starts, or you manually start it, and then it shuts off at that pressure you set. But I've tested them. One, they don't dial in to exactly the pressure, and that's not too bad. I mean, you know, no real big deal, mm-hmm. but it doesn't give you what you're expecting. And then two, they virtually all leak after they shut off. And I was very proud of helping my manufacturer come up with a way to do these low-pressure tests. This company, you have an air compressor?
Yes.
Okay. Put your thumb out in front of your face and think of it being brass. Can you picture something on the air compressor tank that looks kind of that size brass? That's a little pop valve.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That pop valve is what saves your buns if your compressor goes wild and just keeps pumping. It doesn't blow the tank up. It starts leaking the air out.
Sure.
These guys make 300 to 500,000 of those pop valves a month. And great company to work with. And I was so lucky. They prototyped my valve with no money up front. I just couldn't believe it. And so anyway, I says, well, I want this thing to work down to at least 3 or 4 PSI and make sure it doesn't leak. And he says, Harry, we don't have any way of testing down that low. You know, they do if you're a scientist.
Sure.
Like a rocket scientist, you look at airflow and volume and pressure and count molecules and whatever else. But I says, well, how about just test it underwater? And he says, oh, yeah, good idea. So in the design process, they would test for low pressure underwater. I tested all deflators. I tested 8 different brands of deflators underwater, and they virtually all leak. And it's because they don't have the toggle shut off that I have, that even seating force closure that I have. And that's what the patent's on is this uniform closing space. And I'm probably getting way too technical, but picture a spring. A spring is a spiral of wire. And sometimes they'll make that spiral go in close to be flat, and then they'll even grind it flat. But guess what? It ain't flat. There's still a little gap. Mm-hmm. What that means is when that spring is pushing down on something, if you want it to push perfectly down, there's a little void where it's not getting as much force as the rest of the spring.
Right.
And I've overcome that with my patent.
Excellent. So you can definitely be able to rely on these that don't leak.
Yeah, back to your question on how to adjust them. What I recommend you do is you put them on the tire. I give the factory a lot of tolerance. That means it costs you and I less money to pay for them calibrating them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to be set to 12 PSI, but I give them plus or minus 2 PSI. So they can be anywhere in the range of 10 to 14 pounds.
Right.
And sometimes they're even outside that. And I don't beat them up for it because I figure everybody's going to adjust them. You screw them on your inflated tire. They automatically start. When they shut off, you take them off with a valve stem. You measure the pressure. And then the trick, it's got the silver spring in it. The silver spring adjusts at the rate of 4 pounds per revolution. I've got a little reference mark in the adjustment cap that says, here's where you are right now. So let's say it's 10 and you wanted 12. You just screw it down a half a turn, and that's 2 pounds up.
Okay, that makes sense. And that would be, you could go back and forth really quickly and figure out what it's supposed to be. Now, do they hold that PSI well once you've got it set? You can chunk them back in the carrier, and then you can count on that pressure the next time you use them?
Boy, I'm so lucky. You're just the guy I need. You ask the engineer what time it is, I get to tell you how to build a watch factory. I am an engineer. I built an automated test stand that cycles through a valve. It airs the tank up. It automatically turns on. It shuts off airing the tank up. It lets it go down. It pauses for a second so you can video-wise zero right in on the gauge and see, hey, that puppy ain't moving. And then you air it back up, and then it goes back down, up and down, up and down, up and down. And I've got an event counter on it. And it at about 75,000 cycles, I think, I'm getting bored. I don't remember what I ran the arithmetic on, but if a guy was going out two times every weekend for a lifetime, it was like he'd have to be, and he'd have to be, he was using the deflators every weekend. He'd have to be wheeling for 75 years before he'd have run close to what this cycling is.
Excellent.
So they're very repeatable. And I think the bottom line best deal is I've got a lifetime guarantee on them. I have a lot of faith in them. And so short of, you know, you driving over them or misusing them or taking them apart and losing parts, they have a lifetime warranty. So if they quit working, I just give you a new one.
Sweet deal. So I also noticed that you guys have the Stahns tire deflators on there as well. So I would assume you would recommend the Coyote Enterprise deflators over the Stahns?
Yeah, I used to import the Stahns. I quit importing them back a couple of years ago. That's just leftover inventory on the LDs, the SCV LDs. That's the low pressure ones. That's the ones that are the Stahns that are good from 1 to 10 pounds. And that was one of the reasons I thought of using the two springs. Stahn has three model numbers. One is the LD, that's 1 to 10 pounds. They have the SCV5, which is the standard one, that's 6 to 30. And then they have the SCV-HDs, the heavy duties, that's good for 15 to 55. So if you want to match my product in Stahn parts, it takes you three part numbers to get my full range of parts. Otherwise, with mine, you just use the spring that covers what you want and go for it from there. And then the lifetime warranty is a big deal with most people, too.
Oh, yeah. people love that. So if I was looking at your site here, and that's CoyoteENTS for Enterprise.com, CoyoteENTS.com, I see a set of the Coyote, a set of four, for it currently on the website, 7652, and the Stahns are right next to it, the 1 to 10 PSIs set of 4, 8786. And I didn't mention the Coyotes are 1 to 65, like what you've been saying. So for the majority of us, us folks with Jeeps that you want to air down to, you know, anywhere like 15 to, you know, 5 PSI, this set that you have, the CED 456, the ones that run 1 to 65 PSI, that would be the set that I would think that you would recommend, that's what you want to get because you got the most range and all the goodness that you were talking to us about.
Exactly. And then the bottom line is you can buy those adjusted and there's no price increase. That includes adjustment. You tell me what you want them adjusted to. I ship them to you adjusted to that pressure.
Oh, wow. That is really cool.
Yeah. And then the other big plus is we're currently running a 20% discount. And so I'm not sure when it'll occur, but maybe about checkout time or when you're ready to close the site, it may come back and say, hey, use this coupon and we'll give you 25% off any deflators.
Sweet deal. And just to make sure, the deflators come adjusted to the PSI that you want, but you can still adjust them yourself.
Oh, exactly. Okay. Yeah, there's nothing sacred about once they're adjusted. It's just, I don't know what analogy to draw, but I know an analogy to draw. It's like a pressure regulator on your compressor. Mm-hmm. You want more pressure, you screw it in clockwise. You want less pressure, you screw it out counterclockwise. And then you lock the lock ring up. The lock rings on the Coyotes are hex. That was one of the problems with the Stahn. The Stahn is knurled lock ring and knurled adjustment cap. And if you use tools on them, you stand a chance of crushing the whatever it is you're holding.
Right.
And you crush the main body, the piston doesn't move, they quit working, and you voided the warranty.
Mm-hmm.
And mine, if you use a crushing tool, shame on you. I've yet to have to replace them because people use open ends. And that makes it real easy to lock them up as tight as you want. Well, you can strip them, but
right. Well, you can break anything if you try hard enough. So
yeah, I raced motorcycles when I was younger, and they used to call me Torker. Given a chance to strip it, I would. Given no chance to strip it, I'd still strip it.
Bad things happen when stuff comes loose, especially at high speed and high torque. So I can't say I blame you. Well, good. So now we've talked about the beadlocks that you guys have, and we've talked about the tire deflators. And boy, this sounds like if you get the internal beadlocks and these Coyote deflators, you'd be set up for any off-road excitement that you might want to get into. So.
Yep, provided you follow my one caveat.
Uh-oh.
Never air down unless you have a way to air back up.
Oh, very true. Yeah, very true.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want people airing down and get back on the highway and driving and, you know.
Well, it's all squishy. And you're all
tires and then blaming it on me.
You're all wiggly. You know, that's the bad thing about being in business. Somebody's always going to do something that just doesn't make any sense and then try to lay blame on the manufacturer of something. And I just hate that. It's you know, personal responsibility is what I always try to push. All right. So
me too.
So, Coyote Enterprises, Coyote ENTS, the first few letters of Enterprise, .com is the website. And are you guys on the social media? You know how the kids love the social media. They like seeing pictures and things and whatnot. Are you guys into that?
Yeah, my business partner, office manager, wife is on the social media. I'm kind of avoiding it.
Uh-huh.
I look at it like getting pregnant for the rest of my life. You know, you get in these conversations and these contests and these information things and showing what somebody, what you had for dinner and how you cut your thumb. And, oh, God, I look at it as never ending. So she's my social contact, and my web guru is telling me, Harry, you got to come around to the 21st century. So I'm beginning to get a little more involved in this newsletter. I came out with my website, and I would tell people, hey, sign up, and I'll send an occasional notice. I'll bet you I didn't give one notice every 6 months. Now I've got it to where I'm going to be doing about one every 4 weeks.
Uh-oh. It's the next thing you're going to be. You're going to be on Facebook 24/7 posting what you ate and how you're feeling about all kinds of things, you know? Got to get your feelings out, Harry. People need to know your feelings, you know? No, they don't, but people still put it up there. Well, Harry, thank you so much for being on, and a big thanks to Steve for 4.3LXJ, a guy over on xjtalk.com that I've known for years over there. Thank him for putting us onto you and your fantastic products. We'll have to be going over there checking out Coyote Enterprises. That's CoyoteENTS.com. So you just check it out, and if you get one of these products, especially the beadlocks, I'd love to hear from you and find out how you like them. It looks like a great thing to do, and if you're a serious off-roader, this seems to me to be the thing to get, because just the beadlocks on the wheels ain't good enough. You need to go all the way.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate Steve turning me on, putting you and I together, Tony, and I look forward to another time when we talk about whatever.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again.